Chapter 2 The She-Wolf. Breakfast eaten and the slim camp outfit lashed to the sled, the men turned their backs on the cheery fire and launched out into the darkness. At once began to rise the cries that were fiercely sad, cries that called through the darkness and cold to one another and answered back. Conversation ceased. Daylight came at 9 o'clock. At midday, the sky to the south warmed to rose color and marked where the bulge of the earth intervened between the meridian sun and the northern world. But the rose color swiftly faded. The gray light of day that remained lasted until 3 o'clock, when it, too, faded, and the pall of the Arctic night descended upon the lone and silent land. As darkness came on, the hunting cries to right and left and rear drew closer, so close that more than once they sent surges of fear through the toiling dogs, throwing them into short-lived panics. At the conclusion of one such panic, when he and Henry had got the dogs back in the traces, Bill said, "I wish they'd strike game somewheres and go away and leave us alone."
"They do get on the nerves horrible," Henry sympathized.
They spoke no more until camp was made. Henry was bending over and adding ice to the bubbling pot of beans when he was startled by the sound of a blow and exclamation from Bill and a sharp snarling cry of pain from among the dogs. He straightened up in time to see a dim form disappearing across the snow into the shelter of the dark. Then he saw Bill, standing amid the dogs, half triumphant, half crestfallen, in one hand a stout club, in the other the tail and part of the body of a sun-cured salmon.
"I got half of it," he announced, "but I got a whack at it just the same. Did you squeal?"
"Well, what did it look like?" Henry asked.
"Couldn't see, but it had four legs and a mouth and hair and looked like any dog."
"Must be a tame wolf, I reckon."
"It's damn tame, whatever it is, coming in here at feeding time, getting its whack of fish."
That night, when supper was finished and they sat on the oblong box and pulled at their pipes, the circle of gleaming eyes drew in even closer than before.
"I wish they'd spring up a moose or something, go away and leave us alone," Bill said.
Henry grunted with an intonation that was not all sympathy, and for a quarter of an hour they sat on in silence, Henry staring at the fire and Bill at the circle of eyes that burned in the darkness just beyond the firelight.
"I wished we was pulling into McGurry right now," he began again.
"Oh, shut up your wishing and your croaking," Henry burst out angrily. "Your stomach, sire, that's what's ailing you. Swaller a spoonful of sody and you'll sweeten up wonderful and be more pleasant company."
In the morning, Henry was roused by fervid blasphemy that proceeded from the mouth of Bill. Henry propped himself up on an elbow and looked to see his comrades standing among the dogs beside the replenished fire, his arms raised in objurgation, his face distorted with passion.
"Hello," Henry called. "What's up now?"
"Frog's gone," came the answer.
"No."
"I tell you, yes."
Henry leaped out of the blankets and to the dogs. He counted them with care, and then joined his partner in cursing the powers of the wild that had robbed them of another dog.
"Frog was the strongest dog the bunch," Bill pronounced finally.
"And he was no fool dog, neither," Henry added.
And so was recorded the second epitaph in 2 days. A gloomy breakfast was eaten, and the four remaining dogs were harnessed to the sled. The day was a repetition of the days that had gone before. The men toiled without speech across the face of the frozen world. The silence was unbroken, save by the cries of their pursuers that, unseen, hung upon their rear.